This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm Claudine Cheong. And on today's edition of The Informer, we're looking at education. Some good news in Victoria, some less good news in Queensland and also in Victoria. If you have a view on safe schools or on censorship of textbooks or any other LGBT education related issues, let us know. Email onair at joy.org.au or text the studio on 0427 joy949. Before we get into those, so here's Ruby with the 6:30 headlines.
Thanks. Mitcham woman Safina Nikat has been charged this evening for the murder of her 13-year-old daughter, Sanaya Sahib. The Geelong Council is set to be sacked today after a report found a culture of bullying and harassment amongst councillors and staff. The Child Sex Abuse Royal Commission will be working with the Australian Sports Commission and the Australian Olympic Committee, as well as a coalition of major sports, to push state and federal governments to introduce a national Working with Children check. Clive Palmer's sacked nickel workers are a step closer to getting some of the $70 million in reparations they owed, amid damning new allegations about the federal MP's business conduct. Gun dealers are converting the controversial Adler rapid-fire shotgun so it can shoot twice as many rounds, sidestepping an important ban on a previous version of the weapon. Victoria will spend at least $30 million on replacement buses after thousands of regional train services have been cancelled. And welfare group St Vincent de Paul has expressed concern many families are enduring a decline in living standards at the release of new figures showing Australia's 20-year golden period of strong economic growth is over.
Joy weather.
It's still 16 degrees, and after a low of 12 tonight, tomorrow will be partly cloudy with a top of 20 degrees. Thursday, partly cloudy, a top of 24, and Friday, partly cloudy with a top of 25.
And traffic. There is some delay on the Calder Freeway inbound and on the Western Wing Road around Greensboro Road, but the Eastern Freeway and Eastlink look to be mostly clear at this point. And if you're on the train, there are major delays on the Lilydale line, minor delays on the Belgrave line, and every other line has a good service, so not a bad night for public transport. You're on The Informer on Joy 94.9. Some good news to start off tonight's program. The Victorian Education Minister, James Merlino, has confirmed that safe schools will remain safe in Victoria. In a letter to his federal counterpart, Simon Birmingham, which was also posted on Premier Daniel Andrews' Facebook and Twitter accounts, Mr. Merlino says that the federal government's review of the Safe Schools program enables teacher choice, is age appropriate, is in line with the national curriculum, and fully consistent with efforts to reduce bullying and increase support for LGBTI students and staff. He continues that the federal government's subsequent response to the review recommends a number of changes which directly contradict the review's findings and again reinforce the harmful, unnecessary and misinformed debate that the federal government has been encouraging. And he affirms that the Safe Schools Coalition will continue in Victoria with no alterations. So that's some very positive news for our community, as we had been heard from the Premier earlier when the inquiry into the Safe Schools program was beginning, that the Premier said that he would be affirming this, and it's great to see a formal letter stating this. We have sought comment from the offices of Minister James Merlino and Senator Birmingham, but have not received any response to date. Meanwhile, in Queensland, we've had good news for the Safe School program here, but it remains under threat in other parts of the country. There are two petitions about safe schools facing the Queensland Parliament. One, started by the Australian Christian Lobby, requests that the Queensland government hold an inquiry into the Safe Schools program, stop the use of the program's resources until the inquiry is held, and publish the list of Queensland schools using the program. The other requests that the government does not take any such action. So we have two petitions, which are both closing next Monday. And on the line now, we have Michael James, who started the petition to support safe schools in Queensland. Hello, Michael. Are you there,
Hello,
Michael?
Hello, how are you going?
Thank you for joining us.
I am. No worries.
So just to get the timeline straight, which petition came first? Was it yours or the Australian Christian Lobby's?
It was Wendy Francis and the ACL was first. They tried about three times to get it up and it kept being rejected by Parliament. And the one they finally got up was, I think, their third attempt. Not long after they did that was when I got mine in.
So do you know why was it rejected in the past? Was it something about wording or something technical?
Yeah, Wendy's claim is that it was wording, and the reason the wording was rejected was because it was content that she'd copied and pasted out of the Safe Schools program. So she was using that to reinforce her point that it wasn't appropriate if the material couldn't even be quoted. But who knows if that story is actually correct or not.
Okay. So when I checked earlier today, it looked like there were about 9,000 signatures on the ACL's petition and about 8,000 on yours. Is that about right?
That's about right from last check. We've started to close the gap now, thankfully.
So how much campaigning has been done by the ACL and by yourself? And are you doing this on your own, or have you got a group or a network helping with this?
It's just all by myself and obviously Stephen Miles, the Queensland state member for the environment. He's been a great help as well, using some of his network. But I just put it out there, and I put it out there amongst my network of friends, and people have been sharing it, and it's been getting a little bit of traction. I know the ACL and their supporters have been doing a huge amount of publicity and mailing out and telling people to sign theirs. And that's the really unfair thing in these situations. They have such a pulling power. The ACL has 40,000 registered members in Australia, and they can't even get $10,000, by now with that power and. Solidified network, we're catching up to them very quickly.
So is this, can only Queensland residents sign these petitions?
Yes, so this is a Queensland Parliament petition specifically to Queensland schools, and it is open to Queensland residents only, unfortunately. So it'll be interesting to see if there's a verification on any of those signatures from the ACL's group, see if they are actually people who live in Queensland.
So you may have heard about today's earlier news from Victoria that our education minister has published a letter supporting the Safe Schools program as it is now. Do you think that will make a difference for the program elsewhere? Will it, apart from having moral support, do you think it might make a difference to other state parliaments?
I mean, I hope it does. I mean, I know they're supportive of it up here. And I know the Speaker, Pat O'Neill, who's the Labor candidate for Brisbane Central up here, who's looking very strongly to get elected, he's very much in support of it. He said Kate Jones, our Education Minister up here, supports the program as well. In his eyes, he said it's not going to go away. They'll find ways to keep it in Queensland. And I think every other state that goes in and supports it with whatever measures they have available to them, it's got to be a stronger voice of reason for other states to follow suit.
Do you know how many schools in Queensland currently use the program?
Last I heard it was 55. I've seen the unofficial list that one of the groups, not the ACL, but another one they sent out in their mail out to their members, they've been secretly uncovering schools and then publishing it in their own list. So I've seen that list, which has been really interesting. There's a surprising number of really regional schools, in rough areas that actually need the program that are running it, mm-hmm. Which I thought was fantastic. And I was really pleased to see that my old high school is actually one of the schools that's running the program as well.
That's great. And do you know if these, of the schools that have been identified, whether these are mostly state or independent?
I believe it's a mixture of both. From when I saw the list, it was mostly state schools.
Now, I believe that until recently there was a list of schools published on the Safe Schools website, and I was just looking that up earlier today, and I think that may have been taken down in the recent weeks. So what's the argument for or against publishing, making these skills known?
From what I've heard, it was originally published, and then the schools that were on that list were actually being targeted by members of the ACL, with people calling up and doing a variety of complaints and also abusing the schools. You know, and there's even people that aren't even going to the school that have children there. You know, the ACL were just getting en masse and having people harassing these schools, trying to get the program to be stopped. So in a matter of fairness for the schools, the safety of the schools, the teachers and administrators that are there, they felt it necessary to suppress the list, which isn't behaving in that manner. I completely support that.
Yeah, so it seems so that does sound quite targeted, because that's one of the requests made in the ACL's petition is to publish that list. So
absolutely, they want the list.
It's for that purpose.
Yeah, they do. They want to get it in there. They want the list to be out there so they can start campaigning these schools and try to get their own way. And that's what they'll do. If they have access to a public list of these schools, they will start a campaign against them, and they will launch petitions against these schools, and they will, you know, be targeting them in a manner that's not fair to the schools. It's not fair to the teachers or the students that a group like that has that power and ability.
Apart from Stephen Miles, who's put this petition in Parliament, and to the candidate you mentioned, have there been other state politicians making any statements for or against safe schools?
Look, I haven't heard of too many that have been making great public statements about it. I've heard names of others that have been supporting it, and I've spoken to people within political circles who say there's a lot of support for it. And really, I think the problem with, you know, a lot of the state-based people that I've spoken to or heard of is that it's tied, it's out of their hands, it's federally funded, and they see a positive in that they feel that it's going to go ahead. They're feeling positive about the next election and feel that it won't be an issue longer term. So that's kind of where their heads are at as state-based politicians.
And this is not your first time coming up against the ACL in a public manner. I don't know how much you want to talk about your past engagements with them, but what has been your experience with the ACL, and I guess what have you learned from campaigning against them?
Oh, Wendy Francis and I are old friends. We go way back. We're actually we're due for our 5-year anniversary next month or the month after. So in 2011, my partner and I were the models, if you call us that, on the rip and roll poster that engulfed the nation for a matter of weeks. And that was spearheaded by a campaign by the Australian Christian Lobby. And ever since, I have had a lot of dealings with them. I've spoken to Wendy multiple times. I have a phone number. We call, we talk occasionally. And we constantly disagree. But from what all of that taught me back then was that these people are very, very set in their ways. They're very convinced that what they're doing is the right thing. Some of them, Wendy, her heart is sometimes in the right place, but lately she's going a little bit off a rocker. But largely they're organised and they're out there. They are funded. You know, they are the largest anti-GLBTIQ organisation in the country, and that was confirmed by statistics only 2 years or so ago. There was an analysis done of all their press releases for a year, and the vast majority, by a landslide, of all of their press releases that they had released were anti-GLBTIQ issues. And these people are funded by, you know, money from private organisations, from individuals, and they're actually, you know, it's these people's full-time job to sit there and campaign against issues within our community. And that's something people really got to realise when we're looking at these people. They're not just, you know, upset, you know, crazy people. These are very organised, self-righteous people with money and people power behind them. And so when they start doing things like putting up petitions and lobbying the government, we've got to realise that that's actually a very large amount of power they have. And we don't have an organised lobby group like that. We only have ourselves as individuals and our smaller organisations that we're a part of. And we've actually got to be able to stand up and realise there's a big fight ahead of us to stand up to these people.
Yeah, well, so they really are quite a force to be reckoned with. Professional anti-LGBT lobbyists.
Yeah, and they patrol the halls of Parliament quite regularly. You know, Lyle Shelton and any other higher-level member of the ACL can get themselves a meeting in Parliament House in Canberra any day of the week. And, you know, they meet with the Prime Minister and they meet with other ministers in other departments. They have pulling power. And that's a really scary thing.
Mm. Well, I know that we can't predict the future, but the petitions are both close in a week. So what happens then in terms of process?
So what happens then is they'll close, they'll be tabled to Parliament, and they'll go into debate discussion in Parliament as to whether or not any action will be taken from them. Unfortunately, you know, it's nothing that binds them by law to do anything, but they are bound to talk about it, and they have to take it in, and they have to discuss the motions raised, and they have to debate about it and see where they go from there. So at the worst case scenario, we have simply managed to raise our voices loud enough that somebody's going to be in there talking about it on our behalf. And, you know, the ACL petition was only sponsored by the clerk, which everybody's is. Ours is actually sponsored by a sitting minister. And so it will get airtime, and that will add one more voice to the chorus. And every time we add a voice to the chorus, it gets louder and louder.
Well, best wishes for the coming week and for the outcome of those petitions, and thank you for taking your time to speak with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Have a good night. See ya.
You're on the Informer, Joy's brand new current affairs program, and a full rundown on the education stories will be on the Joy website shortly. So we've got another small item of news that you may have seen this morning was that a Catholic school in Berwick, the St Francis Xavier College in Berwick, apparently told their year 9 students to destroy a page from their health workbook, a page referring to premarital sex and homosexuality. And this was reported in Today's Age, though it was apparently something that happened on the last day of term 1 a few weeks ago. And I did try to find somebody from the Catholic education system who might be able to comment, but not surprisingly, was not successful in that. What was interesting is the nature of this textbook. I did confirm a spokesman from Macmillan, the education publisher, that they have a system called FlexiBooks where teachers can, in a sense, build their own textbooks. Macmillan provides resources related to certain subject areas such as health and physical education, and you can actually go to the FlexiBooks website and build your own textbook, choosing which chapters you do or don't want to include. And from what I was able to gather from the extracts published on The Age and from the FlexiBooks website, these pages in question came from the Advanced Relationships and Sexuality chapter of the health curriculum. So I think there's interesting questions there about who chose the content of this book, whether it was a teacher within the college, and whether that, if so, why they were able to customize these textbooks and were then perhaps overruled by someone higher up in the school, but once again was not able to speak to anybody from the school or Catholic education.
Crossing over to the UK now to find out the latest in the news over in the Northern Hemisphere, we speak to Ben Kelly, one of the web reporters for Attitude magazine. Good morning, Ben.
Morning, James. How are you?
Good, thanks. Now, there's some news coming out of the Vatican. What's going on there with the Pope?
So the Pope issued his much-anticipated statement on Friday. It's a major document about the family in modern life, and he spent about 2 years sourcing the opinions of Catholics around the world on tricky issues like divorce, contraception, and homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And what's come from it is that he's basically said that LGBT people should be respected and indeed protected from violence.
Okay.
But he has maintained that a same-sex union will not be considered a marriage by the Catholic Church anytime in the future.
Okay, so not much ground movement there, but at least he's saying that we shouldn't have violence occur to us?
Well, yeah, or as he calls it in his words, unjust discrimination. And of course, it's coming at a time where in America this week, we've got a lot of these states, Mississippi and now I believe North Carolina, who are they're sort of placing religious freedom above gay rights in the sense that they're saying, well, you can discriminate against a gay person if it goes against your religion. And that's kind of opening the door for, you know, local business owners who say are very Christian to say, well, we don't want to serve a gay person here. And so it's quite astute that he would include that, because what he's kind of saying is that he's saying, I respect your religious freedom. That's my job. I'm the Pope. But you don't have the right, really, to discriminate against someone because of their sexual orientation. So a lot of people over here have been saying, oh, you know, the Pope's doing nothing for us. You know, he hasn't given us gay marriage. Well, he's not going to give us gay marriage, really. It's not going to be in his remit.
No.
But the fact that he's picked up on this little thorny issue, which is occurring in the States at the moment, I think is very important.
Yeah, I guess that is quite timely. I wonder if it's going to have any effect in the States, though. And my guess is going to say probably not.
Probably not, because there's a vast array of Christian denominations in the States, and I'm not sure that it's Catholics specifically who are sort of spearheading this kind of legislation.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a different kind of denomination, they might not listen to what the Pope has to say. But nevertheless, he does have influence. You remember that he met with Kim Davis when he was in the States just a few months back.
That's right.
Apparently, apparently she sort of sprung up on him, and he hadn't intended to meet her. But nevertheless, he kind of found himself embroiled in that. So he is at least aware of those issues that are going on.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll just have to see what he has to say in the another 2 years when he releases his next family statement.
It's like Beyonce albums, isn't it?
Now, a story that's a little bit closer to home for you, and that's some elections coming up in Northern Ireland that is the only kind of part of the UK that doesn't recognise marriage equality.
That's right, yes. Same-sex marriage is sort of dealt with by the local parliaments. That's in England, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland. And they all have it now, except for Northern Ireland. The main party there, the DUP, they reject same-sex marriage, largely, again, on Christian grounds. And so far, they have actually rejected it five times in the local parliament in Northern Ireland, despite the fact that there is a majority of people who want it. They're using their sort of parliamentary power as the biggest party in the region to stop it. And we've got these local elections coming up on May the 5th. They've released their manifesto, and quite ballsy, to be honest. They've said in it, you know, we've been opposing same-sex marriage, we stand up for family values, and we're going to keep doing it. So they're kind of putting it out in black and white to their voters to say, look, it's not going to change. So it's kind of, it's very bad news for people in Northern Ireland, because there's no other way forward on this. There is talk of perhaps a legal challenge against the government, but it's a very tricky waters.
It is tricky. And excuse my ignorance, but which side of the political fence do the DUP sit?
Well, the DUP are the biggest unionist party. They are largely Protestant voters. They believe in remaining within the UK. So I know what you're thinking there. It's kind of bizarre, because the rest of the UK has moved on with same-sex marriage. And in actual fact, British Prime Minister David Cameron told the DUP, look, same-sex marriage is a British value, you know, it's part of our law.
Yeah.
But they've said, no, they don't want to have it. And of course, they're looking over the borders to the Republic of Ireland, which has also welcomed same-sex marriage in its own sort of spectacular way. And they're still saying, no, they don't want it. So they're kind of closing Northern Ireland off from both of its neighbours.
That's unbelievable. Well, hopefully there'll be some kind of a challenge in the future, but again, it looks like not much movement there in the near future. They'll just have to cross the borders to find their happiness.
Yeah, go abroad for your wedding.
Yeah, exactly. just finally, some bizarre and quite upsetting news coming out of France.
Well, yes, this is a story where a hairdresser in France has taken his boss to an employment tribunal. Because allegedly, the boss was doing the worst thing. He was texting about the employee and accidentally sent it to him. In the text, he called him a pedé, which I believe it's been translated as faggot, effectively. So the hairdresser's taken his boss to this tribunal, and the tribunal sort of bizarrely has turned around and said, well, actually, it's not wrong to call someone a faggot in a hairdresser's because there are a lot of gay people there. the quote, actually, I'm looking at it in front of me, says, if we put it in the context of the field of hairdressing, the council considers the term faggot used by a manager cannot be considered as a homophobic insult because hair salons regularly employ gay people, notably in female hairdressers.
You know what? If you don't laugh, you cry. That is absolutely ridiculous. I don't know what anyone is thinking there, but I'm sure it'll be taken to the next level. And if it doesn't, then that's ridiculous.
I think so, yeah. I think especially with something like this, which has gained not just national attention, but international attention, that's going to go a little bit further, and he'll probably find that at some point the law comes right on his side, because it's quite shocking, really.
Well, we'll see what happens, how the gay mafia step in their network of of hairdressing salons. Ben Kelly, web reporter for Attitude magazine in the UK, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, James.
That was Ben Kelly from Attitude speaking with James Finlay about the latest news from the UK and Europe. You've been listening to The Informer, Joy's brand new current affairs program. I'm Claudine Cheong, and I've had assistance once again from Bart van der Werf. A podcast of today's program and of our other stories will be on joy.org.au/theinformer, and The Informer will be back again tomorrow at 6:30. Up next, World Wide Wave with more international news.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.